Welcome to the Product Quest podcast. Thanks for joining us on our journey to better understand innovation and product strategy. My name is Scott Burleson, and joining me as always, my co-hosts Jan Vermuth and Jonathan Edwards. Today, we welcome our special guest, Dr. Theomora Ziyamu. She is a behavioral scientist who has worked for the EU through the European Commission, Ernst & Young, UNESCO, and today with her own consultancy in Lexis. Now, our stated goal in the Product Quest podcast is better understand innovation and product strategy. But a real mystery that most product managers and leaders face is the uncertainty with how customers make decisions and what goes wrong. A bit of background about myself as a product manager, I did study quite a bit about decision making back in the day. Chip and Dan Heath wrote a great book called Made to Stick. There was another called How We Decide. And then there's Dan Ariely's Predictably Irrational. But I have to say, I feel really out of date. And part of my journey to learn more is I've been reading and learning from Theodora's LinkedIn posts, which we'll be sure to get into, for well over a year. And she's helped me to find a bit of joy again in this field of behavioral science. And today, I'm really excited to learn from her in person. Theodora, welcome to the Product Quest podcast.
Thank you. Happy to see you all and happy to discuss behavioral science with you.
Well, first, a bit about yourself. You live in Paris. How idyllic? How long have you lived there?
Yeah, I've been living here more than 20 years. Actually, at the beginning, I arrived in Paris for my studies, to study sociology at the very beginning. And finally, I stayed here because, I don't know, it was good for me here because the mentality in France, in Paris, it suited me more. And then also just after my studies, I did my PhD and I started working on small market research companies, etc., just after my studies. And then one thing after the other, I stayed here. And then after market research companies, some other bigger companies, international organizations, etc. Well, I'm established in Paris now. And at some point, I created my own consultancy. We're going to talk a bit more about how I transitioned from market research and employee research to my own consultancy. So yeah, more than 20 years and probably here to stay, but who can say actually? I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll see for the future. But yeah. I have my consultants in Paris, and I work with people worldwide, actually. And it's very, very different because the problems can be the same, issues can be similar, but quite often I can have cultural differences to deal with. So it can be quite interesting. And also, I believe, two things about my consultancy and the way I work. I don't want to work just with specific groups of people. Like I'm in France, so I mostly work with French people or with European people instead of have a more international clientele. And the other thing is I've been discussing this with friends and with clients too. I don't want to, let's say, specialize to just one thing. Let's say doing applying behavioral science in marketing issues, because actually from all my career and from all the different places I worked, I believe it's very usual, at least for me, for the way I function, to work on different things, because when I work with people in human factors, I can transpose and I can have very useful insights to use actually for in a marketing issue or in a patient behavior issue. So for me, it's not, okay, I have been working in different issues and now I'm gonna work just on health issues, on patient behavior or customer behavior. I don't like that, at least for now, because it's extremely interesting to see different things for similar issues, patient behavior, user behavior, customer behavior, citizen behavior. And actually, the interesting things from one area, I can really use them in another area with huge insights. I wouldn't have if I have been working just on user behavior, for example, or customer behavior. So that's about the consultancy and the focus of the consultancy in terms of type of clients and how I work actually with them.
Yeah, that's really interesting. There's this thing that there's this disagreement among product managers, which if you're going to be a product manager, how important is it to know a particular like market that you're in? And some say, well, you are the technology, how much of a technologist? And I've always been like, you don't have to be because the skills are broader than that. Similarly, when you do, when we like you do market research and one industry, one vertical market, let's just make up something, healthcare, the people your clients want to say, well, how much experience do you have in healthcare? They want it super deep. And they don't understand that a lot of the value you bring is you've studied all these different markets and you see these patterns across them that has value much greater than if you were such a specialist in one. I mean, we can, I don't know if this is, I'm not sure if this is an international expression or American one, but there's this, you can expression, you can, I can walk and chew gum at the same time, because you learn one thing that doesn't keep you from learning something else. So I think that's very interesting. I want to back up a little bit though. For you and your interest in behavioral science, how did that develop? Was it something in your childhood? Were you studying your classmates and wondering why they were picking chocolate milk versus regular? Or how did that begin?
No, it's not exactly the childhood, actually. It's when I started work, I had some later, not exactly at the beginning. I had some big projects, for example, for UNESCO, etc., with the
Yeah.
different cultures and different countries
Mm.
involved, and later with market research, and we were trying to make people to change a specific behavior,
Mm.
and we didn't know how actually, because it was about behavior, and at the time it was about opinions, about opinions and about rational arguments. And we had psychology, of course, back then. It's not we didn't discover psychology for customer research now, but I believe we didn't really know how to use it. We didn't have a kind of framework in order to have a more systematic approach on how we want to change people. It wasn't that trendy at that time to say we want to change that behavior. It was something like that, but it wasn't the focus wasn't on behavior. I remember a specific project. We wanted to change how people behaved, and it was all about rational arguments. This is the right thing to do. This is something with more justice, with the real thing to do. Other countries do that, so it's the right thing to do because it's a kind of progress or something. And it was all rational. It's the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do. The thing is, it's not by telling someone they're going to change immediately. And I believe we had very, very little access on emotions. On my parenthesis, on my market research projects, we had a couple of methods, projective methods about emotions and about different things to apprehend the customer behavior, but it was just a small number of things. And first of all, I believe the thing it was we didn't take into account at all the context. And as very often I worked on international projects, I was seeing that we were working with a lot of different contexts. And actually, you had just one approach, and we are waiting for the approach to be efficient for all these different contexts, and it was almost impossible, actually. And finally, I was feeling something was missing, but even though I was a fan of sociology, social science, sciences in general, sociology, psychology, ethnography, etc., even myself, I had some difficulty to apply concretely something in order to have a better result. We had best practices, we have different other methods, and we were working like that. And finally, one day I discovered behavioral economics by speaking with people and in the US, first of all, and by reading things, etc. And as time went by, I found something that was missing, and emotions first, but not that much emotions, because we knew about emotions before. But most importantly, the importance of the context. We have to take into account the context each time in order to have a better result, and how to combine emotions and context in order to have a better result. So behavioral science gave me, and gave us actually behaviorists, a kind of framework in order to have, as I was saying, a more systematic approach in what we do. And as I was saying, in advertising, for example, etc., emotions, the use of emotions existed already, but I believe we had not a kind of specific framework and specific methods in order to approach this and see how we're going to change behavior with focus on the context on one hand, and on the other hand, with a focus on action instead of opinions. Because actually, it was all about opinions. We think that, subsequently, we're going to do that, etc. It was thought, action, but it doesn't work like that, actually. It's the focus, it's on action from the beginning. It's not we have to change their thinking in order to change what they're going to do. It's a lot more subtle than that. I mean, it's more complex. So yeah, the lack there, I was feeling a lack of framework and a lack of something that I had some difficulty to define, actually. And I was saying, okay, we have some results, but something missing, because I have so many different contexts and how it's gonna work. And it wasn't work every time. So yeah, and behavioral economics, I believe, for me, it gives a structure and a framework to approach behavior,
What if I could
a more
get your
structured
opinion on
approach.
something? There's a model that I imagine you're familiar with, of the elephant and the rider, where the elephant, so this is sort of like if you were thinking of how somebody would make a decision, like the rider would be like our conscious, rational thought, trying to, let's just say you're looking at a donut and then you're trying to decide whether or not to eat the donut. The rider's like saying, well, that's not healthy. He's trying to steer away, but the rider's on the elephant, much more powerful, so representing more emotion and sort of takes over. I'm sure that's a simplistic thing, but how does that line up with your framework or the way you see how people make decisions?
How, excuse me, how?
How so the elephant and rider, you're familiar with that?
I know about that.
Yes. What's
Let me
how
see.
does that what I'm cur what I'm trying what I'm curious about is this framework that you're able to apply. How similar or different would it be from the elephant and rider type way of thinking?
Actually, I believe it. It depends on a couple of things about the elephant and the rider. When I say framework, I mean we have a structured approach, which means what? Before saying about that, I believe what we didn't know before, it's what when we say it's about decision making,
Yes.
it's us. If it were just one decision, we need to make a decision, right? But it's
Yes.
not about just one decision. It's I see it like a kind of path. Let's see, we have a path, a line, and we have here A, B, let's say the middle, and C. And in the point A, it's when the other person becomes aware of the action you want them to take. Okay,
Okay.
so just aware they don't know anything. They okay, and in point C, let's say it's they just took the action you want them to take. So it's the end of the path. And I imagine this as a path. Why? Because actually, in point A, then they don't make any decision. It's just the beginning, and they have to work all the path till C. And let's say they make a decision in point B, somewhere here. Okay, so they work from here to here. They take a decision in point B. This is not the end of the thing. Why? Because from the decision to action, there is a path to work. It's not because I'm making a decision now. That doesn't equal I'm going to take the action you want. The decision is just a decision. I'm going to buy a car tomorrow because I thought about it, etc. But I didn't buy it yet. So I have to work from B to C. And actually, from A to C, it's not just one decision in point B. There are a big number of decisions from here to here. It's decision, 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 maybe 30, maybe 20, I don't know. And I see it as follows. Every decision point at the same time is a crack. So at every decision point, they can just fall through the crack and disappear, and we can have them back. So, if we have 30 points or 55 points or something, imagine how risky it is to go from A to C. And when I say we have a framework, it means we have a structured approach to deal with every crack on the way. This, let's say, crack number one, it's about an emotion they had from before. Crack number two, it's an emotion from yesterday because they have a row at home, etc. Crack number three is they can't do it now because they want to buy something, but they forgot their wallet at home, etc., etc. Can be small cracks or big cracks, but actually, but they're all different. So, in order to deal with each crack, which is a decision point, we have to have a very structured approach in order to say, this type of cracks, we're going to approach them like this. The other type of cracks, we're going to approach them and deal with them like this, etc., etc. So this is what I mean when I'm saying we have a structured approach in order to deal with all the decision points, which I insist can be each one of them a crack, which means risk, which means they disappear probably forever. So it's not an easy thing to say. You just need to make a decision and okay, you took the action and that's the end of it. It's a decision. We have a long path from there to taking action. And it's not about one decision. It's about a big number of mini decisions, let's say things like that. And we need this kind of framework, which is very structured, different type of frameworks, actually, the different types of frameworks exist in order to approach that, because otherwise it's a bit naive to believe we need to create something attractive in order for the other party to feel motivated and attracted by the thing, actually, and they're going to do it. And I mean, my clients spend time, even me actually, we all do these kind of things. We spend time make the thing attractive. I don't know, our product, our service, our platform, our whatever, and attractive in order to increase motivation. And if they like it and if they feel motivated to have it, so it's okay. They're going to make the decision. And I believe it's really not at all like that. Motivation is the last thing we need to deal with. And we have now some other more important things to deal before that. And I'm saying again about the framework, because the framework actually is structured now in a way when we know what we need to deal with first, what second, what third, etc. And we don't necessarily need to do all the points in our frameworks. Why? Because sometimes, let's say, one framework has 5 points and five dimensions to explore. If we explore just one, or just two, maybe it's enough. And we don't have to apply the whole framework in order to get the decision we want at the end, because the dimension number one or the dimension number two or three of them can open doors and trigger other things by ripple effects or something, and these other things can make the decision a lot more easy. So we don't need to apply 100 of things and 100 of frameworks and explore 100 of dimensions, etc. The difficult thing, in my opinion, is to know in every case which dimension or which dimensions are the more appropriate to use. We can't, for each case, say first is dimension number one of the framework, and second is number two, and after number three, etc. We need to know which one, according to the case, is the more appropriate, and to choose it in order to achieve the result we want. Is that clear?
That
Or
is
you can.
perfectly
So
clear. Yeah, go
I
ahead.
had a question relating to what you've just talked about. As I understand it, so you talked about this ABC and about how so C would be, let's say, the final state or final destination. And at the same time, you also mentioned the fact that motivation is not enough. And you also talked about that there are some cracks. You use that word, which I would associate, tell me if I'm wrong, with basically context, maybe the context of a person and maybe different events that might happen on this path from A to C, and which could obviously be different for every individual. And so my question is in terms of understanding how we can parse really this notion of behavior. So we are interested in jobs to be done as a framework, which is if we could summarize it in a sense that it's a goal-directed framework. So we try and understand people's goals and how we can help them achieve that. So what part of behavior, you mentioned motivation is not necessarily the most important. What part of behavior is not explained by this goal-driven attitude? So what is the part that is not goal-driven? So I understand the cracks are also in, for me, kind of goal-driven, because you would don't like to overcome maybe some
Yeah,
event.
the cracks, it's not from what you were saying. The cracks, it's not only personal obstacles or things like that. It's something a lot more specific. Let's say an example. Let's say for user experience, you're going to buy something on a website, and something I experienced actually. And I was buying tickets for theater, and it was very difficult to find where I can buy the ticket, actually. They had all the sessions, the days, the whatever, and the place. And actually, I was there 15 minutes in order to find where in a small theater with a small website with a couple of pages, it was very difficult to find when I had to pay. It was just I knew what play I wanted, and I was going just to pay, and it was very difficult. The difficulty to find just a button with pay or something, that this is one crack, and it's just not the button, it's the fact that you are looking for the button for 12 minutes or something. This is a crack. It's not necessarily something I'm somewhere and I'm not feeling well, and it's something for my home or my past, and I can't go over it. It's something very specific in the path to go to get there, to buy tickets. So,
But
why
yes,
and what
so
else?
the question is the crack here. So, for example, for the tickets,
Yeah.
you have a motivation to go to the see this theater. One could also say that you have potentially a sub motivation to be able to pay to in order to acquire this ticket. So you're searching for this button because you have this goal. So this is kind of what I had understood, that these cracks seem to be very somehow I don't know how to say goal driven. I mean but I always wondered when I hear about behavioral science, what is the part of this that cannot be explained by this goal driven behavior?
The part that cannot be explained. Can you give me an example just for me
Well,
to
so for
find
example, I mean, if we take, well, if we base ourselves on, for instance, these books on behavioral science, there'll be different kinds of examples, such as basically we're going to influence people, like Nudge, for example. This other book also talks about this. How can we set up a frame such that people will make a certain decision rather than another one? And basically what we're saying is we're kind of, that's how I understand it, and I'm by no means an expert, but we're kind of hijacking potentially some kind of, maybe someone wanted to do something and we kind of make them do what we would like them to do.
Something
But
else, in terms of manipulation, you mean, or
yeah,
to
so basically
manipulate
the
them?
Yeah.
Like they don't really want to do something, you mean, maybe, and you try to nudge them towards something they don't really want, and it's kind of manipulation. Is
Yeah.
that what you're saying, or
Yeah,
what?
for example, there's this example, this I remember this, I think it was from Predictably Irrational, where you have this menu, and on the menu, if you put for pizzas, for example, in a restaurant, and you put the price of a scooter that's very high, then people, you've changed the frame, so people will pay more for the pizza. So it's true that this is maybe hard to understand how we can put this in a kind of goal-directed way. But yeah, so my
Yeah,
question is.
actually, this is well, if we can use the word manipulation, this is a kind of manipulation, and in a sense that the person who goes to the restaurant, they're not aware of it, and maybe they wanted to pay, I don't know what, 20 euros for a bottle of wine, and finally, with the structure of the whole menu, etc., they're going to pay 40 or something. This is a kind of manipulation. It is. I mean, I can't say the opposite. Actually, the thing is, as I see how I apply behavioral science, it's not about to manipulate. I believe I'm going to give an example afterwards. I believe the thing is when people want to do something, like when I was going to buy my tickets. I want to do that. Okay, I want to do that. But there is not any path in order to get there. I mean, it's a simple thing. I want just to buy two tickets and I can't do it. So this kind of path that doesn't make it possible for me to do whatever I want to do, this is problematic. And we can't change things in order to in that in this specific case, in order to improve the user experience. But what you were saying, it's more about some kind of manipulation. I'm going to give an
Well,
example. It's not exactly, yeah, tell me.
yeah, no, if I may, so I'll simplify my question. It's are goals enough? Are understanding people's objectives enough to explain their behavior?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so because when we have a goal, and we create this goal in an environment and a context, we are at this specific moment, and we don't know how we're going to react ourselves and others in a context totally different. It's why actually people and all of us have already heard about the irrationality of the whole irrationality of behaviors. And I believe this is not a great way to approach the whole thing. Why? Because actually, when we say a behavior is irrational, for me it's not irrational at all. Because we can talk on in general terms. It's very rational in a specific context and under specific circumstances. So it can be rational because in that specific context makes perfect sense for the person or the people doing it. So when we say it's irrational behaviors, it's just when we think in terms of only in economic terms, I don't know, I can gain something or I can gain 20 euros because finally I didn't buy the tickets. And but the thing is, okay, I didn't buy the tickets and I gained 20 plus 20 or 50 plus 50, 100 euros. Okay, so this is a good thing. And okay, but for me, it's not a good thing. The emotional gain I have from going to the theater at that specific moment after work or whatever, it's huge comparing to 100 bags I can save, if we can say, because actually I couldn't find the buy button. So it's not just I saved that, this is rational, okay, I have 100 euros in my wallet right now. But actually I lost something which is very important for me, especially for me because I love theater. And for me, it's a loss because actually I didn't do it. So you know, the irrational, it's what is important actually. It depends on the perspective. And I'd like to give you an example about the manipulation, just to go back to that. I have two clients who came to me and they say, I'm in that committee and they're going to vote. And I would like you to help me to make people vote for me. One woman and one man 2 weeks ago. And actually this, I don't know how to do it. Okay, I don't have a magic wand, first of all. And second of all, I don't know how to do it. Why? Because actually it's not about behavioral science. This is a behavior, they're going to vote. This is a behavior, okay. And the thing is, the people there with the committee and the vote, etc., for them, it's a conscious decision. I thought about it, and I'm going to vote for Jonathan or for Scott or for Jan, but I thought about it beforehand, and for me, it's conscious. I'm going to vote for Scott because blah, 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 in my mind, okay? And for this, I can't do anything. It's not about subconscious factors that can make the path easier and possible. I simply can't. And I told them I can't do that because actually for me to be able to do something, this means there is a path now. You have a path. You have a kind of process. And I'm going to review your process to see where there are cracks and stops. You don't have a process. You try with irrational arguments to make people vote for you. I can't do anything for you. I mean, I can maybe, after thinking, do the following thing, not for these small committees, but for us, for people to vote. Maybe you have read about this example already. I believe, I don't know, in the US, it was it's a real thing, not... and actually, they hire buses in order to move people from small areas to the big city. I don't know how exactly it's organized in the US, in order for people to be able to vote. This is, I facilitate a behavior, so it's going to happen because actually I make the process easier. They don't have a car, they are in a isolated place, et cetera, et cetera. So I have buses, they go there, they pick people, they go to New York or I don't know where, and they are able to vote. This we can do something about. Persuade or manipulate people to vote for me rationally because I don't know what actually, I can't do that. So just for an example between manipulation and possible and not possible things, I don't know, maybe somebody can work on that, I don't know exactly how. Yeah.
Can I ask there, I would be super, I mean, there is this, let's say, dark side of behavioral science, or dark side also of the UX. But do you say, okay, this changing someone's mind about the political view is not possible, let's say, for theoretical reasons. So there is no intervention that I could do such that they change their mind, or is it an ethical thing? So it's an ethical for you. You say this is not something that you should do as a person. You have to ask other people, and they might.
Yeah, it's something I have to work on. I don't know. It's it's also the question of ethical or not ethical. This is an issue too. But for me, actually, I explain it like it's rational or not. So for me, it's is that. The other person decide rationally, I don't want to vote for you because blah, blah, blah. In my mind, never mind the argument, etc. And which means consciously, I thought about that. So if you come to me to try to change my mind, we are starting to have a conscious conversation. Those are my arguments. What you are saying, I say this because of that, etc. And this is not unconscious. At all, this conversation, I'm not saying there is not unconscious reasons why I vote from X or from Y, etc. So this is what I'm saying. It's not about conscious things. Beyond that, maybe if we explore the issue further about voting, there are things to do, but I'm not aware of because I'm not working on this kind of things. And finally, I couldn't be able to help these two people, because actually they thought it was okay, their thought, like it's a behavior voting. So if we can influence behavior, why not? And it's not, it's a bit more complex than that. So it depends what behavior. And we need a path. I need a path to work. We come, you come with your less than perfect path, and we can go over the path together, step after step, and see what happens. And the thing is, I was writing 2 days ago or something in LinkedIn, I post about that. And I was, it was small examples from my clients. And I was asking my clients, okay, for this process, how many decisions do you believe they have to make? And they are totally unable to come up with a number. They can come up with a number, but after really insisting, because they're going to say, okay, it's just one decision, or two, or maybe three, for the normal things, not for the big platforms, etc. And finally, I put in the post, they can say five, and after the behavioral audits, we find there are 18, or they say three and we have 22, etc. Because they have difficulty seeing how many decision points they are, exactly what we were saying before. And when we think it's just three decisions to make, so it's not a big deal, okay, we can work on it, and we audit the whole thing, it's much more complicated. And it's normal why they don't have the results they want, because actually they believe it's just two or three, about two or three decision points, and they focus on that, and they forget actually the whole path with plenty of cracks and how we're going to get a good outcome when there are so many cracks, and cracks equals risk. And how we're going to do when we're not aware of the risk, because we can be aware and do something. We can be aware and say, okay, it won't happen to me. And we can't not be aware at all. I mean, this is a tricky situation, because actually, even if we want, we don't see what the risk is. We don't see from where it will come to us. And so...
I think
that's why, many things at the same time. So we jump from one thing to another. Yeah, Jan, we were saying something.
Well, I just wanted to quickly emphasize something, which I think is that that quite often in well, at least from the innovation and product development work that I do, companies tend to underestimate the risks that customers have to take in order to switch products. So just simply there, yeah. I mean, there is a, even simple stuff like changing the I don't know, your what you wash your clothes with. That decision, mm-hmm. or how, with the toothbrush, changing toothbrushes. I mean, we use it every day, hopefully. But switching the brand is a risk,
yeah.
for every consumer. And I think there is a tendency sometimes to underestimate the risk involved or the perceived risk involved, because yeah. we're so yeah. in love with the new product we put out. So I like that you emphasize that every decision yeah, is a risk absolutely. On the part of the yeah. consumer.
And it can be a risk that the customer sees. Maybe they can see, okay, I have an iPhone and it's like this and like that, and I don't want to buy something else. This yeah. is conscious. And also there are all the unconscious things, like what you were saying, they don't want to switch. The status quo is really the biggest enemy. They do something now, and this is the biggest enemy. Yeah. Actually, there are two. The first thing is what the behavior they are doing now. This is the biggest enemy. Now, it doesn't mean they keep doing it because it's best for them. It's because they have the habit to do that again and again. And it's a huge cost to go above the status quo, because it's some more fatigue and some more decisions in their day. And they already have enough, because maybe you probably read, you have around 20,000 decisions a day. And let's say they have that 20,000 decisions, and you ask them to change, I don't know, brand X for a toothbrush. This is more decisions and something they don't, they didn't think about, etc. So one thing is, one enemy is what they're doing now. And so we have to move them from that to something new. And the second thing, which is also very complex, is to move them from doing nothing to do something, actually. It's not just I'm doing something else because blah, blah, blah. I'm doing nothing. I'm doing nothing. I don't want to do nothing. And this is, doing nothing is an action and a decision too. Mm. I'm making the decision to do nothing. So it's difficult to move from here to there. And that's why actually I was saying in the beginning, we need a framework that explores step by step. And the first important thing is to move them to the first step of the ABC path, the first step. This is huge already. But then we have a lot of work to do in order to keep them in the path and to protect them from falling into the cracks. And the most important thing is to move them from one step to the next step. I believe finally, this resumes quite well what behavioral science does, is to help move them from one step to another, to the next. One step to the next, from the next to the one next to the second, etc. So this is step after step, we're going to arrive at point C. But it's a work between the steps and from one step to another in order to walk them through the whole path.
I'm glad you went back to the framework. That's exactly what I was wondering about. So I wonder if I could paraphrase it and tell me where this goes off and, or where I'm wrong, and then you know, I'm sure I have some questions. So it sounds like with the framework, first we want to decide what's C? Now, what's the ultimate decision we want them to make? Then we're going to look mm-hmm. at all the steps. We're going to figure out what all those many steps, I think you called them, maybe particular emphasis on A, because to get them to take that first step. But then what are all the steps between A and C?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the first step in the process, is determining these micro steps, describing them with some precision and specificity, I would assume.
Actually, to the first step, it's very important. But actually, yeah. I would say even more important than that, it's to know what our customer, our patient, I don't know, what we want them to do.
To do.
Because when somebody comes and say, I have clients who come and say, I want to gain more customers.
Yeah.
We know all about that.
Yeah.
We need all of us this thing, but this doesn't help me to know how I'm going to work with them. So a question I ask is, what do you want them to do? To do?
Is that C in this model?
Oh, I want to have more customers per month or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you want them to do? This can be quite different. I want them to open more my newsletter. This is action and behavior.
Right.
I want them to, I don't know, I want them to subscribe to my webinar. I want them to follow a certain process if they are patients or something. Or for a client I had, I want them to take the medicine regularly. I mean, or every night without forgetting because they are ill, etc. So this is action. And we have them. The first step is to define what is we want them to do, which is in terms of action and behavior. If we say I want them to be healthy, that doesn't mean anything for me as a behaviorist. In order to be healthy, more healthy, they have to do certain things. So we have to focus on action. What do you want them to do? I want them to eat more vegetables, but still it's not enough. What does it mean to eat more vegetables? It means to eat, I don't know, two green salads per day. So it's more quantitative after that. In order to make it easy to do, because actually if I say, go be healthier. I mean, you can't do anything. It's so vague and so general. So,
If we say I want them to purchase my product, how would you address this kind of action? So is that well framed? I guess it's not probably, but
I want them to purchase my product. It's a lot better than I want them to be healthier or something. Because actually, if you say that to me, I'm going to ask you, what is your product? Let's say it's, I don't know, an e-course or something. You create a course that people, clients can take online. So this is quite concrete, but still I'm going to ask you, what is exactly the action you want them to take? Maybe, I don't know. Tell me yourself, what is the exact action you want them to take?
I want them to...
Let's say I'm a client, and what do you want me to do?
Starting from the end or starting from the beginning? So the last action?
No, I'm your client, and you have an interview with me, and you are telling me, Theodora,
I want you to input your credit card number in this form and press send.
Exactly. This is a very concrete action. And so we are going to go through your process in order to find the cracks that prevent them from taking the credit card and paying. This is a very concrete behavior. I'm taking the credit card from my wallet and I'm paying now. Okay. And even if they want to pay with a credit card in hand, it's possible that your platform, your e-course, your whatever, is built in a way that prevents them from doing this. So even if you believe it's quite easy, I review the whole thing, they can buy, I put friends, check the whole thing, etc. It's certain that there are many points with that stop the action from happening.
What
even
I didn't
if
mention...
You don't see them. Normally, clients don't see the thing, so that's why it can be difficult.
What I didn't mention is that the course is about is teaching people how to build castles out of matchsticks, and it's it costs $5,000. So I don't know if if we'll be able to get them to sign the to give in their details.
Yeah,
this is
another thing because what a behaviorist will do is to optimize the path to paying actually in this specific case. But if it's something completely irrational, I mean, I don't know, it's matches from 2,000 euros. It's not the fault of the behaviorist, because actually something else before the path that it's not okay. Actually, as I was saying before, it's not a magic wand. I mean, I want you to come to me. And I'm not selling anything, but I want you to give me, I don't know, 10,000 euros. This is a behavior. I pay you 10,000 euros, but I can't act on that, because actually it's completely irrational at the first place. I mean, I can't, I'm not going to help you, let's say, improve your product. I can do that. This is your job. This is your thing. And you know how to, let's say, create an e-course. This is your job. My job is, if this is okay, if people is something that is feasible, I'm going to help you to make people say yes when they need a course. If they don't need a course, because I don't know, if they don't need it, I can't work miracles. But yeah, if they do, there are several things to do in order to facilitate the whole thing.
That makes perfect sense. So I want to get back to the framework, the process. So the first thing it sounds like is what, and I heard you use the word concrete a few times. I really like that. What concrete action do you want them to take? So it can't be too high level, like grow my business. It's, you know, select my product or pay for my product, or I don't know, some action, or go to my website, or once on my website to, I don't know, but to get very concrete and specific about what action you want them to take. And then from there, what are the steps? And I assume there's some scoping of like sort of where does this begin? Where does it end? What are the steps they need to take with the final one, or maybe not even final, but one of the steps being that to take that concrete action? And I like your thought. And then as part, so we track out the steps and then we chart the cracks, which I believe, if I understand correctly, are places where they fall out of the process. They make a decision where they're not on the path anymore. Is that right?
Exactly. For several reasons. We can talk a little bit about that later. Yeah. A couple of examples about that. First of all, it's about the cracks and what kind of difficulties they are. First of all, there are several things, but just the two or three most important. We have to make it possible for them. We can't ask them to do something without providing, as I was saying, the path to get there. We can't say, okay, I want you to go to that city, and there is no plane, no bus, no train, you don't have a car, there is no routes, nothing. But you need to go. I mean, there is not the possibility. We don't give them the possibility to go there. So, first of all, it has to be possible.
Yeah.
Second, it has to be easy. Easy, it's not easy. It's very complex, because easy and behavioral science, it's much more complex than what we say when we say easy, actually, when we use the term. And it has to be easy for them, which means they need to do that. They need to spend a minimum of energy and decision fatigue. Those need to be at the minimum. So easy, well, it's, let's say that in general. And then another thing is to make the whole thing with us as little stress and uncertainty as possible. Because when they, it's first uncertainty, because when they feel doubt and uncertainty, they start to stress. And with the first stress, we are starting to lose them. So possible, easy, with different dimensions and different things inside the TAM, and also without trying to minimize doubt, fear, stress, uncertainty. So, yeah, a lot of other things, but already with those three have groups of things that follow. And with this kind of things in mind, we can check the whole path in order to find the cracks we're talking about. Is that clear?
It's very clear. Yeah. Is there an example that comes to mind about, well, let me ask, back to the process before that. I mean, well, the question that comes to me, how do you, well, first of all, I can see the tremendous value. What in just, what is that concrete action? If they might not have even, might have not even thought about it. Just be healthy. It's not good enough. Charting out the steps, charting out the cracks. Is with the next step, what's the next step? So, I mean, what it seems to me it would be is throughout that, where are we losing the most people? Where's the biggest crack? But I don't know. What's the next step?
I couldn't say the next step in the path, you mean?
Or the next in your process. So let's say we've got our concrete action, we listed the steps, and I believe from there we're going to determine, you know, what the cracks are along the way.
Yeah.
So now what do we do next?
What do you do next? Actually, once we explore the whole thing, we audit the whole path.
Audit the whole path. Find
we audit the whole path. We find exactly where the cracks are in this specific case.
Yeah.
And then we try to mend the cracks using psychology tweaks, which means we're going to mend the crack number one by switching things and by changing slightly things in order to build a bridge where the gap is. So there we have different tactics for that. And we can use biases. We haven't talked about that, but it's another big chapter. A parenthesis here about biases, because you can use them to mend the cracks. Biases, cognitive biases, can be, as I was writing, friends or enemies. And we can, we have to recognize if they can help us, and we can choose the right bias to use in order to mend a gap, a crack.
Yeah.
So we have methods, other things also about biases. So we have small tactics, small tweaks, which means we don't have to rebuild your whole process, because it can be a huge thing. Really like an online platform or something, we are not going to rebuild the whole thing. We're going to have the small decision points here and there, and it's small tweaks just there, which is very small and also can cost very little.
Yeah.
Comparing to a brand new platform with several changes, etc.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We mend the cracks with different methods. And finally, where in the path we had holes and cracks, etc., we have small bridges or nothing at all, actually. Mm. It's just...
I love the visual sort of geographical language of cracks, and now we're mending it. We're going to place a bridge over it. I think for me, that makes it very easy to follow. And almost like you're visualizing this path from A to C, getting easier for somebody to travel. I like that. Is there an example you can give of a bridge that was built or a crack that was mended using your techniques?
I'm thinking about a platform. I can say something about biases, for example. Something else. You surely saw this already. The very simple things when somebody sells something and they have a website and they have prices and they say for, I don't know, have a plan A, B, and C, three, let's say pricing plans. And You want to try to persuade them to buy this thing instead of that, etc. You have already seen that they put this is very popular, I don't know, on Amazon or something. This is very popular among, I don't know, small businesses or solopreneurs.
Right.
And this, actually, it's not a manipulation. It gives an indication what is best for them.
Right.
And if they see other solopreneurs use this and with success, maybe it's good for me. Why this is important? This is important because the person who goes there and who doesn't know how to make a decision, it's a small push in order to help them see what other people do. And when we say what other people do, this is something that removes stress.
Yeah.
And this is a bias, you know, the social proof. So we can use, in inverted commas, this bias in order, as a positive thing, in order to push them or to help them actually do something, because otherwise the decision is delayed or stopped altogether. So it's a very small thing. This is just a small sentence we can use, but there are other things. Depends, actually. Pricing is a bit more complex than that, but it depends. But this is a small thing, a small bias we use in order to help them make a decision. Because otherwise, it's very difficult. Why? Because actually, when we make a decision, it's almost always by comparison. We can't make a decision out of nothing. I mean, something costs, I don't know, 100 euros. Is that expensive? Is that not expensive? I mean, it depends what it is. And actually, it's always in comparison with something. It's, if I'm saying to you, this car costs 100 euros, immediately in your mind, you are going to compare it with other cars, and you're going to say, this is not serious. You know, I mean, it's not in a vacuum. So as everything works by comparison, when you say most solopreneurs prefer that, you compare yourself with other people, you feel less stressed because other people did the same thing and they're not dead. So it's okay. And it's important, actually, because actually how we evaluate risk, we don't really know if the other people, all those other people like the thing, but they already bought it. So for us, it's a guarantee, like, okay, probably they're still there. It's just software or it's just a car. Or you know.
Right.
So instead of spending the whole night thinking about, am I going to pay 100 euros for this software, etc., it's easier to make a decision because other people similar to me made the same decision before.
Right.
Which is important too, because for somebody who is a billionaire, I mean, we don't have maybe things in common, or we don't spend money in the same way. So, yeah.
That's a great example. Great example. And when you're talking
we
about
see this everywhere. I mean,
using social proof. But then the things I heard you say is reducing stress, reducing the perceived risk. I might be inserting my own words here, but perceived risk of the decision maker. And there's some comfort in the social proof. I mean, at least they're, you know, if it's bad or good or bad, at least they've got a lot of company. You know, they're there with other people.
Yes,
so
exactly. And even
and
if
probably,
it's bad, you have company. You are not alone.
You're not alone.
Crying, you know, and I'm alone, because being alone in a bad thing, it's even worse, right? I mean,
it's worse
comparing to I'm in the same bad situation as I don't know 1 million people. So it's
And if you're alone in a good thing, you're like, what? Something must be wrong. Why am I the only one here? You know, so
exactly. It's like we go to the doctor. I had this experience, and the doctor said, "Oh, but you don't need to worry because hundreds of people have the same thing." And I thought to myself, how this is supposed to console me? I mean, I'm still ill. I mean, why?
And they're still alive. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a matter of perspective.
But I think this is the interesting thing. Like going back to this, do we talk about goals or is it something else? What is behavior and how do we talk about behavior? I think this is really where I see this kind of difference. I was wondering, would you say somehow that these tricks that you will use, is it basically hacking people's heuristics? So I actually looked for the word heuristics before the podcast, and so in Wikipedia it says any approach to problem solving that employs a practical method that is not fully optimized, perfected, or rationalized, but is nevertheless sufficient for reaching an immediate short-term goal. And so
rules of thumbs, actually, as we were saying before, in order to save energy, because as we were saying before, if we have thousands of decisions to make in one single day, if we don't have heuristics, actually we're totally lost, because imagine to have to consciously think about how you're going to make those decisions. It's really a lot. So actually it's a good thing, because they help us somehow survive. I always tell my clients that they help us survive and save energy in order to make what we have to make as decisions for the rest of the day, and in order to finish the day alive somehow, because otherwise how? I mean, it's not like we have five decisions to make in one single day, so it's okay, I will find some time to do that. But with thousands of decisions, I believe it's not viable to do otherwise. So on one hand, they help us. They help us. And on the other hand, we can decide irrationally, as we were saying before, because actually we decide very quickly and we can make mistakes, etc. So depends. When it's a good thing and when it helps, it's okay. When it's not, because biases actually can be quite dangerous things in some areas. For example, I was working with pilots the other day, and it's their biases can be really can have a very important impact in their work on a plane. And when we know in what we do biases is finally a bad thing with an impact and impacts our decisions, the thing is biases and automatic behavior, automatic thoughts and actions will be there almost all the time, because we're human beings and we can't say we're going to see the end of it with some training, with through reading, etc. They are going to be there all the time when we have to make decisions. The thing is what? Is to learn how to recognize them, which means we go from unconscious thinking to conscious thinking. We stop just a moment. We say, okay, this is, I'm about to make a bad decision. And even if the automatic thing comes every time, we stop. And what's the difference? The difference is we're going to react differently. So the same thing will come again and again and again after the training, after a million books read, etc. But the progress is I'm stopping here. I recognize the thing. Any bias can be, I'm racist, can be, I make a bad decision. So many biases. I stop consciously, and this time, to the same trigger, I react differently. So this is progress, and I believe this is doable, because we can't make bias disappear from our head. It's there either from for forever, or because we learned to think in a certain way. And as adults, actually, they're there for quite some time. So they're going to be there again and again and again. And the intelligent thing to do is, okay, I'm stopping here. This is not the good thing to do. My reaction is different. So my reaction is different one time, twice, three times, four times. The brain we learn to do things differently after some time, because we can do that actually. And even if we don't feel like doing it, we have to force ourselves to do something different, to exposure ourselves actually to a different reaction. And consciously, we decide to react differently to something that is automatic. Otherwise, we are not in control. We can't be in control of our biases, but we can't be in control of the reaction, as psychologists say, in other instances, actually. And I believe this can be progress, and we can deal with that, especially in contexts like pilots, in risk context, etc., where it's more dangerous than in minor decisions we can have to make every day.
It seems that a bias is really an heuristic in a way, right? I mean, if I have a bias that, you know, I think, you know, I probably shouldn't go to McDonald's because that food won't be very healthy. Instead, I should go home. That's probably true, right? So what am I going to eat for lunch? Am I going to McDonald's, or am I going to whatever, eat some fruit or fish or something, you know? So that bias is, you know, it seems like it is an heuristic in a way. It's because it's based on something, which helps you to make, like you say, reduce that decision fatigue. Otherwise, we'll never be able to decide what to eat for lunch.
yeah, absolutely. And it's always about helping people make decisions quicker.
Yeah.
And within quicker can be, we can have mistakes too. I mean, it's so many decisions every day. So, yeah.
Well, if somebody wants to learn more about behavioral science, where would you recommend they begin? What books should they read, or courses to take? What would be a starting point to learn more about this topic?
Courses, I know there are a lot of courses out there. I don't know, there are really a lot. I believe the first thing in general, I'm not going to give names of courses because there are really a lot, even for the real beginners. I believe that the important thing is, first of all, to read easy to understand books, not to understand how behavioral science works, but to start question our status quo, because it's very difficult for all of us to say, okay, I was wrong about that, and I was wrong about that for my own decisions at home or at work, etc. It's quite difficult. You can discuss about this like that now, but it's difficult for people to say, okay, I was wrong about that, excuse me, or I'm going to do things differently from now on. And I believe the first thing is to be aware of the thing that we can make mistakes, even if we are not aware of the thing that we are about to make a mistake. And just to accept that, because we're human beings, and in any case, it's going to happen. It's not, okay, I'm better than the others, so it's not for me. But like many people says, this is a bias too, actually. And just to start questioning our certainties somehow. And okay, I thought that for, I don't know, 20 years, and maybe things are different, or maybe I think I'm very good in my job, and I know what my customer wants, and I'm an expert, so I know how to build it, etc. But maybe not, or maybe you don't have all the elements in order to do this. So first of all, question our certainties, and starting from there, and there maybe read a bit more. But there are courses out there, but I believe this is an important first step. It's before starting applying anything. The thing is just to say, okay, I was doing this till now, and I realize it's not like that. And we have science now that says the opposite. And maybe I want to try that, just try or just test, and then we see. But it's important to start from there. And it's not, okay, there is a thing out there called behavioral science, and let's try to apply the things in our product, our platforms, etc. I mean, before that, it's okay. I'm accepting we are all humans. We make mistakes, and I have to take this into account. It's not just doing meditation or self-acceptance or anything. It's we have more to gain by thinking we maybe don't have all the elements, and just be open and something that is goes the other way. Just explore, actually. Not it's not good what I'm saying, and I'm taking samples. Just explore, explore, test, and read a couple of things, research, just findings. We have a lot of things now, and combine the whole thing just to start thinking a bit differently. I believe it's a huge advantage. And why? Because once we do that, we start to be open to other things. And the more open we are, the more our thing will work better, because we have insights from different avenues and different, I don't know, different people with different expertise, etc. So just be open and test, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's okay. We can try something else. But I believe we can start from there before reading how I'm going to apply. As I was writing the other day, I'm going to have 3 pricing points instead of 4, because science says it's better to have 3. And I don't understand at all why this works and if the thing works for my product. My service. It's not as simple as that, actually. So just be open, just explore and ask for help. I mean, this is really, I mean, it's the most intelligent thing, I believe, because even if we are experts in our own areas, I believe it's huge to ask for help from somebody who knows something else a bit more than us. It's like, I don't know, kings in some other I don't know, countries in who had consultants around, and they didn't know anything. And for each thing, they were asking to one consultant, should we go to war with X, Y, or etc. So just be open and be willing to not to accept everything we hear, but just having letting. Different opinions come to us, and just by ourselves, and combine and test.
Before... I have a very specific question. I've got 2 little kids, and I'm trying to get them to do a better job brushing their teeth more consistently. Do you have any advice? There's my is that
yeah.
That's a concrete action, I think, right?
Just very quickly, you can associate this with something that is very pleasant for them.
Mm.
So let's say, I don't know, maybe they tell me something that's very pleasant, kind of.
So game. Candy. You give them candy afterwards.
They love their stupid
after they brush their teeth.
So it's kind of habit creation, and... They're not going to think about I have to brush my teeth because it's the chore and I don't want to do it. They're going to associate with something that is very positive for them. And so if it's associated, they're going to do it. I don't know if you read something I have read. It's not my one of my clients. Somewhere in Africa, or no, in South America, I believe, they had, it's something like that, actually. They have difficulty to persuade kids to wash their hands. And they create small, soaps, and the soaps had inside a small, how do you say that? Comment des jouets?
A toy?
A small toy, yeah, very small toy in the soap. And actually, we could see the toy inside the soap. And they had to wash their hands a lot in order to get the toy inside. So this was a very good thing, actually,
Clever.
With a lot of success. And before, they weren't washing their hands at all. And then suddenly, you know, without you have to wash your hands because it's healthy, because blah, blah, blah. Without anything like that, It's just the idea how you associate something pleasurable for them with the chore activity. I don't know, maybe it will work. Try. You're going to say afterwards.
The struggle is real. The struggle is real. Well, I asked you about where a good starting point for people to learn. Well, I have a suggestion. People can follow you on LinkedIn and read your posts as I have been. You've got very specific. What I really like about them is you have very specific information. Like, here's a little scenario, and here's something that works, or here's some customer situations, and here's what we did. So you speak in very specific, concrete terms, offering very. You mentioned some of these biases more. We've talked about a couple here.
Getting a lot of detail. It's good. On purpose, actually, because I didn't want to talk about behavioral science when we see research articles and things like that, because my clients prefer to understand to be written really simply. They are experts in their area, but when it's written quite simply with examples or with a graphic or with things like that, it's a lot quicker to see it, to grasp the meaning, to even to use it, actually, if it's something that is usable. So it's not to repeat what I'm reading in research, in articles, in whatever. I don't like that. I don't believe they need that. They need something very specific that trigger a need, or they recognize themselves and say, okay, this is my thing. How can I use it? Or, I didn't know about that, but now she writes about that. It challenges my thinking, etc. So this is important. I mean, it's my objective. It's quite simply written, graphic or some drawing or
They're good. I highly encourage people to go there. And then the other place for them to find you is in lexis.com, your company. That's ENLEXIS.com. Is there any other ways folks should connect with you that we've missed?
I believe LinkedIn is the best way because I'm quite active there. The website is gonna undergo quite a few changes because I'm changing a little bit my offering. The main things are going to stay there, but I see that some of the clients need some more regular help on a regular basis. So I'm going to offer something additional to what I already have. And I believe LinkedIn, for now, it's a good place because I'm quite active there and people write to me via LinkedIn, let's say 9 out of 8 out of 10, something like that. Yeah. So I'm quite active with posts and I always respond, even if it's something, not a client, but they have a question or they don't understand something very well. I always respond, so... I believe for now it's the best way to find
I highly recommend. I have one final question. So we're going to create a behavioral science conference. Okay. We're going to have lots of people. We're going to have fun. And as part of that, we're going to pick a movie. We're all going to watch the movie together. This movie it could be educational or it could be completely for fun and frivolous, but you get to pick. What movie are we watching together at our conference?
A behavioral science conference?
Yeah.
I don't know about movies. I mean, I know about movies, but behavioral science. Lady Killers.
Hmm.
Have you heard of that?
I have not heard of it. What is it again?
Of 1955. Check it out.
What's the name of it again?
Lady Killers. It's
Lady Killers. Okay,
it's
wow.
An English, British movie.
Oh, nice.
Really old one, right? 55.
Yeah.
And it's a good one because there is, I mean, I'm not going to... to talk about the movie, but there are some behaviors there that are funny, and we can comment on that quite a lot, I believe. Yeah,
okay.
I don't say more because actually, maybe you want to see it. So,
Yep, Lady Killers. I will watch it, and we will show that at our conference when we put that on. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us today. Anything else you'd like to let us know about?
No, maybe I can sum up just three very important points
Yes,
for
please.
me, and that we have already talked about that, but just to sum up things I quite often see with my clients. Maybe three things. First thing is, as I was saying, we don't have to focus at all at the beginning on motivation, which is the opposite from what people usually do. Second thing is, we have absolutely to focus on action, not opinions, not anything. Action, which means what we want them to do and what they are doing now. What they're doing now, it's very important, and the obstacle number one. And finally, what we were saying about the path, we can't possibly ask them to do something, saying, I know how they're going to behave, and without giving them a well-designed path in order to get them there. They can go nowhere without a path that's leading to the desired action. I believe those are points I see quite often. And sometimes it's quite difficult to make people see them, actually. They believe there is a path. They believe they build the right thing. They build the right thing, but there is no way to get there. So it's not the same thing, actually. And sometimes I have to deal not only with the platforms, the project or the product. I have also to make them think differently, first of all, in order to accept the changes in their project, in their platform, in their service. Because actually, in order for them to accept the changes I recommend, they have to think in a certain way. If they say, okay, we knew all that already, or we did something else, etc., they're not going to listen to me. So I have sometimes to deal with two different sides. I believe it's a couple of good points to keep in mind.
Excellent. Nice summary. I look forward to listening back to this and also going back through your framework. Very well. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us. And that, friends, concludes today's Product Quest podcast. Follow us on LinkedIn. Reach out to us anytime at productquestpodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next time. We will be in touch on LinkedIn land. I'll give you my review of Lady Killers.
Thank you so much.
Right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.